Hey there, Marshall here. I just wanted to give a quick spoiler warning to this episode. I don't always go full scale spoiler on these Netflix Q episodes, but I don't go out of my way not to spoil things either. So I thought I'd just throw up a quick warning. Better to be safe than sorry. Now go ahead and enjoy this episode.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once. Never, never, never.
Hello there. This is another episode of Strewn Along the Path here on the Journey Into podcast. And today we're going to do another Netflix Q episode. So I wasn't intending on grouping these like I've done some of the previous episodes. But the last two movies that I watched are kind of connected. And that is Gifted. And the Book of Henry. And looking back, we also watched the show, the movie Hidden Figures. And so I guess I'm going to kind of link these three movies together. Two of them because they're the most recent. And then I threw Hidden Figures in there because there's kind of that thread there of very smart children, gifted children. And so I'm going to go in that order. I'm going to talk about Gifted. And then I'm going to talk about the Book of Henry. And then I'm going to talk about Hidden Figures. So that's our map for today's episode. And yeah, like I said, we're going to start with The Gifted. No, sorry, not The Gifted. You got to be careful there because Gifted, just the word gifted, is a movie that stars Chris Evans, also known as Captain America. Steve Rogers, but not in this movie. This is a totally different movie. It's Chris Evans as Frank Adler. The Gifted is a new TV series on Fox. It's related to the X-Men. It's got mutants and the Sentinel Services. People against it. I'll talk about that show at some point. But just the movie, just Gifted. This movie with Chris Evans playing Frank Adler. And he is, we find out later, the uncle, but he is caring for a little girl named Mary Adler. And the little girl is played by an actress, young actress named McKenna Grace. And it's funny because we keep seeing this girl show up in TV, in shows. Guilty pleasure, I guess my family kind of likes to watch, my kids mostly, but I've seen all the episodes as well of Fuller House, which is on Netflix. And it's, of course, the grown-up flip-flopped version of Full House. And I never watched Full House. I'm getting way off track already. I didn't watch Full House growing up. I knew what it was, and I'd seen an episode here and there. But I was never a dedicated follower of Full House. But for some reason, I kind of like Fuller House, even though, you know, it is pure cheese. And just like the original, and you know, it's a standard by the book cutesy sitcom kind of thing with obvious punchlines and all this anyway, but there's something about it that I just find charming. Either it's a throwback or novelty or something. But anyway, so I've seen most of the episodes of Fuller House, and this little girl plays like the girlfriend interest of the youngest son on the show. But, you know, I never connected her to anything. And then my wife and I watched Designated Survivor. It's Kiefer Sutherland as the president of the United States, who became president because he was the only surviving member of Congress during an attack on the Capitol. And it's in its second season now, and it's just him and all the things that he faces as president in this desperate situation and all the things that are going on. And it's a pretty good show. I like it. It's, you know, it's not something that it's enjoyable. So, but anyway, this little girl, McKenna Grace, plays his daughter in the show. And so she's not on the show all the time, but when they have her, you know, when they have his daughter on the show, she's there. And then same kind of thing with Fuller House. She's not in every episode, but she's there quite a bit, you know, whenever they need something about this, the youngest son. She is usually there as his friend or girlfriend or whatever you want to call it for that age. But we finally made that connection. Oh, it's the same girl. It's the girl from this show and this show. And then we watched Gifted, and she shows up again as Mary Adler, this little girl who's super smart. And it starts out where basically school is starting. She's never gone to school. He's always taught her at home. I think she's in the first grade, or she's the age of a first grader, so she's like six or seven years old. And he's forcing her to go to school. And she's like, why do I have to go to school? Why can't you teach me all these different things? But he wants her to go to school, so he forces her to get up and get ready. And she gets on the bus, and she's kind of crabby about it and everything. But he gets her on the bus, and she goes off to school. As soon as she does that, a woman who's kind of the landlord of the houses in that area, and this character is played by Octavia Spencer. So I guess that's another connection, I guess, to Hidden Figures. But anyway, she's worried and concerned that, you know, we're going to lose this girl. You should have never sent her off to school. Well, it turns out that this girl is super smart, way smart. She's very good at math and all these things. And so, I mean, she goes to school and she's bored. I mean, the teacher's teaching 1 plus 1 and 2 plus 2 and 3 plus 3, and she's just totally bored. So the teacher kind of starts to challenge her a little bit. Okay, what's 10 plus 20 or, you know, something like that. So she tells her, and then she gets more and more complicated, like three-digit addition kind of thing, and then she gets that answer, and then she says, okay, if you're so smart, well, she doesn't say this, but you know, you can tell the teacher's like, okay, fine, what's, you know, 127 times 351 or something like that. And the little girl kind of sits there and doesn't answer, and the teacher's kind of like, okay, fine, I finally got her. She doesn't understand, or I finally got, you know, where she wasn't going to be knowing all the answers. And so she starts to go on with the class, and then the little girl says, it's, you know, 27,000, whatever the answer to the problem is. So the teacher goes over on the calculator, does it out, and realizes that it's correct. So she's like, wow, this girl is really, really smart. No wonder where she's bored. You know, she doesn't say that, but I'm kind of extrapolating from what is shown in the movie. And so when Frank comes to pick up the little girl, the teacher goes out and says, hey, you know, I just wanted to talk to you about your daughter. You know, she's really smart. And she was answering all these math problems in class. And he kind of tries to push it off. And I can't remember the name of the mathematical method. But he's like, oh, yeah, sorry, that's me. I taught her this algorithm or this easy way to do math fast. And you know, he kind of gets off of that answer, and then he takes his girl home, and he's kind of talking to her. He's like, I told you not to show off. I told you not to do these things. She goes, well, you know, I didn't like... And she got in trouble because she yelled at the principal or something like that. Later on, the teacher continues to test her abilities, gives her papers to work on that are harder math and algebra and that kind of stuff. And the girl's kind of excited, and she starts to enjoy doing these advanced math papers and things like that. And so the teacher, you know, and she looks up this mathematical method, and eventually she calls Frank on it, and she says, look, you tried to pass it off, but she is very gifted. She's a very smart girl. Eventually it goes up to the principal, or she stands up for a boy on the bus who was bringing in an art project. Somebody trips him and laughs at him, and his project gets ruined, and she gets mad and you know, stands up for the boy, and then the older kid is like, oh yeah, what are you gonna do about it? And she goes over and hits him in the nose with a book or whatever. So, you know, she gets in trouble for that. And so Frank Adler gets called in to deal with this, and he's talking to the principal, and the principal kind of says, you know, I think you, according to this teacher here, you know, she's very gifted. Your daughter is very gifted. I think she needs to go to this other school, which is like a private school for gifted students. It's set up just for people who are advanced like Mary is. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And you don't really learn it all at once, but essentially he doesn't want her to be locked away and, you know, treated as special, and she wouldn't have friends and she wouldn't have a life because she'd just be this gifted child that just works all the time, or, you know, is trying to please adults all the time and all this stuff. And it's a really good story because it goes along as you learn what his background is, and you learn what the reason for all these, why he feels this way. And essentially his sister, he's actually not her daughter, he's her uncle, but his sister was a genius. She was gifted as a child, and she, you know, she was always studying and didn't have a life and was very unhappy and ended up killing herself after she had had a baby. She'd had Mary and came to visit Frank and said she really needed to talk to him, and he kind of blew her off. And when he came back, she had killed herself, but the baby was still there. And so he raised the baby and had moved to Florida or whatever. And he had specifically tried to shelter Mary, you know, once he realized how smart she was and that she was a genius as well, and very gifted and very smart. He tried to shelter her from, he didn't want her to end up, Mary to end up like his sister and just unhappy and all this stuff. Well, turns out there's more to that, where his mother was also pretty smart. She was a British lady, and she was pretty smart in a mathematics program, but then she got married and moved to America and never developed her abilities or never followed through on any of her studies. And she regrets that. And she, you know, with her daughter, who was such a super genius, you know, she put all of her wishes upon her and forced her to work and, you know, never have a life. And so he has a lot of issues with his mother. And you learn this because the principal ends up, you know, looking into it and calling the grandmother, getting the grandmother involved, and the grandmother comes. Now, you know, she's now interested in Mary because she learned that Mary was this mathematical genius or gifted. And so now all of a sudden she wants to be part of her granddaughter's life, and she wants to take her back with her to Boston and, you know, put her in school and everything, just like before. So, and Chris Evans, you know, definitely fights against that. And so they end up going to court. And of course, he's just a guy with a job. Well, we find out he used to be a philosophy professor. And I should have said this at the beginning, but if you didn't want spoilers, don't watch the show or don't listen to this. And maybe I should just say, maybe I should start whenever I start talking about a movie, maybe I should just do a general review of it and then say, now, if you want to hear more of the details, stay with me. If not, you can go on to the next movie. So anyway, they end up going to court, and, you know, there's this struggle, and it's, there's some good writing, some good relationship stuff in there. I mean, he doesn't hate his mother. He just hates what she did to his sister. And, you know, he tries to talk to her normally. He's just a down-to-earth guy. You know, he's almost too good to be true in some ways, because, you know, he's just trying to do the right thing, and he's not sure if he is doing the right thing, but he's doing what he feels is right. It's a good show. There's parts where you cry, there's parts where you laugh. It's just one of those movies that, it's not an action movie. It's not but it's not a kids movie either. It's good for kids. We watched it with our kids and they enjoyed it as well. But it's not like a cutesy kids movie. It's got serious things, and you know, and it's an emotional show. But it's just, I thought it was really well done, and it was neat to see Chris Evans in that kind of a role, because I've never seen him really act in that way. I mean, yes, he acts in the Avengers movies, and he acts in movies that I've seen before, but this is the first time I really saw him not just being the big, you know, hunky guy in the show, and, you know, it's not action-oriented or whatever. And I've seen, I'm trying to think of Chris Evans movies. Of course, you know, he was Johnny Storm in the first couple Fantastic Four movies, and then they made him Captain America. Before that, I'm trying to think of, he was in the movie Push. That's kind of a superhero movie, too, but it was more of a serious movie. It had telekinesis and telepathy and stuff in it, but it wasn't a quote-unquote superhero movie, but there were superpowers involved. What else has he been in? What am I missing? I guess I need to go to IMDb or something and look it up. But I don't know. For me, this is the first time I've seen him in a serious acting role when he wasn't being the either the big jock or the big guy kind of thing. I'm sure there's something else I'm forgetting, but anyway, I thought he acted really well. Let's the teacher looked really familiar to me, but I didn't recognize her name, and I haven't looked up her filmography. But Jenny Slate, what else has Jenny Slate been in? And let me know. I thought the mother did a really good job too. You saw her very hard edge side, her snooty side, that she could be the you know, mommy dearest kind of mother. You saw that in the courtroom dramas. But you did see her in lighter moments. Not lighter, like in humorous, but where, you know, you could tell she did have some feelings and some compassion and things like that. And I'm not going to spoil the ending of it for you, but there's some decisions that are made that make you think it's going to go one way, and there's revelations about that, and things that end up differently. It's a really really good movie. I was going to get to the actress's name. I had it written down, but I can't find it. Lindsay Duncan played the mother, and I'm sure she's been in other things because she acted pretty well, and I'm sure she's had quite the career. But I don't recognize her from anything in particular. You know, she could be a stage actress that came on for this role, or she could be, you know, in a lot of BBC type things. I don't know, but if you know more about Lindsay Duncan, let me know. But for this little girl, McKenna Grace, I was pretty impressed with her acting abilities too. I mean, you know, she's got the cute kid and or the indignant child thing going, where, yeah, I've seen that before, and you know, it's kind of an easy part for kids to play because part of it is just part of their makeup, you know. But I think she acted really well for, you know, this kind of a role. I've only seen her in the, you know, small segments in those other TV shows I was talking about, where you wouldn't really see her acting ability shine. But for this movie, I was impressed with her. I wasn't annoyed by her acting. You know, sometimes when you get little kids and they're trying to be cute or they're trying to be whatever, you know, you can tell, and you think, oh, they're probably a little brat when they're not acting, you know, or whatever. But I didn't feel that way about her. I thought she did really well as a young kid actress. And we'll see what happens, you know. We've seen that with, like, Dakota Fanning and things like that, where I haven't seen much with her lately. I don't know if she either kind of got out of the Hollywood thing, or when she grew up, she found hard... It was hard for her to find roles because she wasn't the little girl role anymore. I don't know. But, yeah, we'll see if this actress shows up in anything else. But, like I said, it was a neat departure, I think, for Chris Evans. It was an opportunity for him to show that he can act pretty well. I mean, yeah, he did just kind of play the guy, you know, the local hunk. But he had a heart, you know. He wasn't just the hunky guy, you know. Yeah, the girls liked him, and there was a little romantic thing with him and the teacher, the girl's teacher. But yeah, it really showed him, you know, somebody with convictions, and he had a lot of acting where He made mistakes, and he got mad, and he did the right thing, even though it was hard, and that kind of thing. But I think I've talked enough about Gifted, but I recommend it. I enjoyed the movie. It was kind of neat to watch. The next one on the list here is The Book of Henry. And, you know, one of the things that made that film stand out or attractive to me was because it was directed by Colin Trevorrow, who was, if you listen to the Delusions of Grandeur podcast, you know that Colin Trevorrow, for a long, long time, was supposed to do Star Trek, or Star Trek, was supposed to do Star Wars Episode 9, and recently got replaced for that by J.J. Abrams. He was let go by Lucasfilm. And one of the things that a lot of people pointed to is the reason why he got taken off of Star Wars is because of this movie, The Book of Henry. Because it was, I don't know, a lot of people said it was wasn't very good and was disturbing or whatever. And I can understand where some of that comes from. But I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's, and we'll talk about the, maybe some of the more disturbing elements of it. But I thought it was a decent movie. And it, for him as a director, I don't think it showed any incompetence on his part. Yeah, I thought it was very well directed and put together. And the format of it was pretty good. I, you know, as much as I know, I guess, but. So I was intrigued. I wanted to see what the Book of Life, or the Book of Henry, was all about. And but even before all this stuff with Star Wars and Colin Trevorrow, when I saw the previews for it, I thought, well, that looks like an interesting movie. So I figured we would get it, you know, watch it at some point. I wasn't going to go out in the theaters to see it, but it was kind of on my radar before all this stuff happened with the Star Wars movie. But since then, I've been even more eager to see it and say, well, what's everybody having a problem with? Or why does everybody hate Colin Trevorrow all of a sudden because of this? And of course, I don't know Colin Trevorrow's other movies other than Jurassic World. And I like that movie well enough. So Book of Henry here, we have another genius child and his name is Henry. So that's why they call it The Book of Henry. And that actor, the boy that plays that, is Jaden Lieberher, maybe? I've never seen the kid before. He may have acted in other things, but he plays Henry. And, you know, he's very smart and knows a lot of stuff beyond his years. He pretty much runs his mother's life. His mom is a single mom. I can't remember what happened to the dad. If the dad ran away or something like that. I can't remember the whole backstory. But anyway, his mom is a single mom. She has two little boys, Henry and his brother, Peter. And Peter is played by Jacob Tremblay. And I don't know him either, but I thought he did a really good job. Both of these kids did a really good job, I thought, of acting. They showed a lot of emotion. And it was maybe a little bit easier for Jaden because he, well, maybe not easier, but, you know, he didn't have to show as much of a range of emotion because he was pretty much a pretty serious kid. But he showed an emotional range too. But anyway, the mother is played by Naomi Watts. And of course, you know, Naomi Watts has been doing movies for a long time, but to me, she's one of those actresses that I never recognize. I never say, oh, that act, oh, that's Naomi Watts. And she always just kind of sneaks up on me. I'm always like, oh, who's that? Oh, that's Naomi Watts. That's cool. So, anyway, she plays the mom. Sarah Silverman plays her mom's friend that she works with at a diner. I guess the other actor of note is the neighbor of Henry and his family, and that's played by Dean Norris. And Dean Norris, I guess, he's one of those guys that he always ends up playing a bad guy or somebody that you can't trust. He comes across as one of those good old boys, and it's always into something. I guess he was in Breaking Bad. I didn't watch that show very much, but the first time I ever saw him, he was the mayor or whatever on, now I can't think of it. Oh, it was the Stephen King TV adaptation, Under the Dome. He was kind of the bad guy in that one, too. He was the mayor, but he was, you know, into a lot of stuff, and I think he was also on the car dealership or something like that, but he wasn't a guy to be trusted in that Under the Dome show. And I've seen him in several things since then, and I kind of like him, you know. He's one of those guys that he's up to no good all the time, and he plays that part pretty well. I don't know if I've ever seen him play a good guy in anything, but so he's their neighbor, and he has a little girl named Christina, and Christina is played by Maddie Ziegler, who I've never seen before either. I think she might have been the weakest actress, but I don't know. She didn't have a lot of opportunities to act, I guess. There was one scene where she was dancing ballet, but it might have been just the way that it was directed. Anyway, I'm not going to judge her, I guess. But anyway, so that's kind of the cast of characters for this movie. But like I said, little Henry, how old would he be? I think he's in middle school, but he maybe sixth grade, somewhere in there. But anyway, he's of course excels in his classes, and he's not cast out of the kid. All the kids kind of like him. Well, I guess he gets bullied, or his brother gets bullied in one scene. So I guess not everybody likes him, but he's not like this, you know, nerd that everybody hates and everybody, you know, there's the standard bullies and stuff, but he seems to get along well with his classmates. But he is super smart, and his teachers like him, and he's definitely different, and he's awkward in a lot of ways, but he seems to fit in pretty well, which is kind of neat to see. He's not just this ostracized person that struggles a lot. His mom, you know, she's been through hard times, you can tell that, but she really doesn't take responsibility for a lot of things. She kind of lets Henry do a lot because he's so grown up. I mean, he takes care of all their finances, and he's got them, you know, trading stocks and all this stuff. And she, you know, he kind of corrects her if she's acting inappropriate. You know, he'll say something like, well, Mom, you shouldn't be swearing in front of your children, or, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be doing that, or you shouldn't be drinking so much, or, you know, this kind of stuff. So it's interesting to see that dynamic, but she kind of lets him. I think she kind of feels secure with Henry in charge of things, and she doesn't have to take as much responsibility. She has to earn the money for I guess he's doing that too with stocks and stuff. Anyway, she does, you know, work at the diner and has a job, and she feels like she needs to take care of her kids. And then he gets along really well with his little brother, and his little brother loves him a lot, and you know, doesn't always understand exactly what Henry's doing, but likes being around him. And well, anyway, so you kind of get the flow of things, and he really likes Christina, the neighbor girl. He can, nothing pervy or anything, but, you know, he can see her from his room into hers and things like that. He's not watching her undress or anything, but he notices that she comes to school sometimes and she doesn't want to talk, or she might, I think they indicate at one point she has come to school with bruises and stuff, and he's seen some stuff to indicate that she's getting abused by her father, or as she always reminds everybody, it's her stepfather. But again, I guess her mother had died, and that's why she's living alone with her stepfather. So anyway, you can tell that she doesn't like him, and you know, Henry definitely, you know, thinks she's being abused, and he tries to talk to the principal, he tries to talk to his teacher, but you know, there's like, well, and then her stepdad, the neighbor, is also like the chief police commissioner or something like that, so he has an in with the police, and you know, he's gonna get the kid gloves or whatever when anybody. So like, he calls like the abuse hotline, and you know, says that they need to come talk or investigate. And so, and he's watching through his window, and he sees the guy come, and then talks to the girl and talks to the dad, and he leaves. But before he leaves, he gives the guy a hug, and ends up it's his brother that works for the hotline, or I don't know, social services or whatever. And so he's like, pretty much realizes that nothing's ever going to be done to stop this abuse. Well, in the middle of all this, Henry has a seizure and ends up going to the hospital and finds out that he has an inoperable brain tumor. And again, he kind of knows everything. And so even before his doctor says anything, he kind of realizes what the diagnosis is. And he's going to die. And there's a lot of emotional scenes with him and his mom and him with his brother before he dies. But eventually he does die. And it's about the middle of the film, I guess, when this happens. I guess before all that happens, you kind of see Henry out scouting things and planning something. But it doesn't really go into any detail. And so, anyway, he tells his little brother before he dies, he says, "After I'm gone, you have to tell Mom and give her my red notebook and give it to her and let her read it. You don't read it, but let her read it. She needs to see this book." And so that's what becomes the Book of Henry, is this little red book that he has to give to his mom after he dies. And so he dies, and you know, that you see that the mom and the little boy suffer. And, you know, the mom doesn't really know what to do or how to live without her boy to tell her what to do. She's kind of flailing at stuff. And, you know, she tries to go back to work, but she's not doing very well. And then her boss says, you know, "Henry sent me this letter and told me that you guys are more than taken care of financially with your stocks and stuff. I'm forcing you to..." Basically fires her, right? Because she's not doing well, and she needs time to cope with losing her son. Well, eventually the little boy sees the red book and remembers it, and he's, instead of just giving it to his mom, he reads it, a little bit of it, and he comes and he says, Mom, "I think Henry wants us to kill Mr. Sickleman." And she's like, "What?" And she starts reading the book. And it's got a whole plan, maps and, you know, figures and points. And, oh yeah, I guess there was this scene where it showed him going into a gun shop and listening to somebody order stuff or get a gun that they need or something like that. And so, you know, there's this whole thing about a gun, and it's basically a plan on how to murder the neighbor, Mr. Sickleman, to stop him from abusing his daughter, because I guess Henry figured that was the only way to handle this, since there was going to be no other repercussions going through the normal channels. And he also made an audio tape for his mom to listen to, tape recorder and stuff. And so a lot of the movie is her listening to him give her instructions through the tape. You know, they do some convenient wording, like where she asks a question when she's listening to the tape, she asks a question, and then Henry anticipates that she would ask that question, and so he gives her the answer. And they do that like 3 or 4 times, and the first time, oh, that's kind of cute, or that's kind of clever. But after that, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, he was a smart kid, but come on, you're kind of overdoing that a little bit. But anyway, so there's this whole thing about how to kill this guy. And so it does become kind of dark and kind of disturbing. I mean, it's disturbing that this abuse is going on, the neighbor, but then here's this little boy that has a murder plot on how to kill this guy. And his mom is kind of going through it. I'm like, wow, this is kind of becoming like an Alfred Hitchcock kind of movie, where you got this murder plot going on and what's going to happen. And you know, almost like Rear Window, right? Where Jimmy Stewart, you know, sees this stuff going on through his window and, you know, comes up with all these conclusions and gets his girlfriend involved and all this stuff. It's kind of got that vibe going on, but, you know, it's It's this Henry, his words from before he died. And so I started kind of getting into it, even though it is a disturbing thing. This kid is trying to kill this man after he's dead with all this stuff, and his mom's going through with it. She's buying a gun, and she's getting the silencer, and she's got all this stuff set up. And I'm like, so on one level, I'm like, yeah, this is kind of messed up. I understand why people are kind of disturbed by it or upset by it. But on the other side, I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool. This is kind of like Rear Window, man. This is like Alfred Hitchcock. I'm really getting into it. What's going to happen? And Dean Norris, man, he's the perfect guy. He's kind of threatening, and he's kind of, you don't know what he's going to do. And, you know, there's a lot of tension in there. There's this one part where the mom's looking out the window, and she's seeing that the girl's going to get abused. And she calls him and talks to him about the leaves, and she's going to rake up the leaves. And just his delivery and his presence, I guess, is really, I like it. I like him as an actor. I like kind of that image that he portrays. Anyway, so I'm kind of getting into it. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, is she really going to do this? I mean, come on, this is murder, you know? And so there's this talent show at the school, and she takes the girl and her son, younger son, to the talent show, and they're going to do stuff, and he's planning this special magic trick for the talent show. But as soon as she gets there, she kind of gets him set up, and she takes off, and she's got the headphones in. She's listening to the instructions on what to do next from this, I don't know, you could almost call it the tape recorder of Henry instead of the book of Henry, because once the tape recorder shows up, it's pretty much the whole plan through the tape recorder. And I get it. That's easier to portray in a movie rather than showing the pages of the book. You can listen to the kid talk on the tape recorder. So I get that. But the book of Henry kind of falls by the wayside to the tape recorder of Henry. But anyway, that's okay. I mean, so, you know, she goes home. She goes out into this treehouse thing that Henry's set up, you know, a long time ago with all these inventions and stuff. And she sets up the gun and she lures the guy out. I can't remember if she just made a call or something. Maybe it was she used the tape recorder or something to make a weird animal noise. But she gets the guy to go out in the woods, and she's got him in her sight. She's going to kill him. And you're thinking, holy crap, you know, where is this going? And eventually she gets distracted. One of the inventions of Henry gets triggered or something. And she gets distracted from shooting him. And then she can't find him. He's not in her sights anymore. And then he, just before that, looked like he kind of figured out something was going on, or he saw something. And so now you're thinking, oh, is he going to come after her now? Does he realize that something's up and he's going to come find her and kill her or, you know, do something to her? And so again, this tension is building up like an Alfred Hitchcock type movie. And you're wondering what's going to happen to the mom now. She didn't kill him. So what's going to happen? But the cool thing about her not shooting him, and she takes out the headphones, and she's like, what am I doing? He's just a little kid. He doesn't know what's right and wrong. You know, he's just acting emotionally. At that point, she kind of grows up herself. She kind of realizes, I'm the adult. I need to be making the decisions. I shouldn't just be following Henry and do whatever Henry says. I'm a grown-up woman. I should know what's right and wrong and what to do. So there is a confrontation between, and I'm a little bit surprised, and this is part of the movie where I thought was a little bit fudgy, is that she's coming out of the treehouse or whatever with the gun, and she's decided not to kill him, but then he shows up at the treehouse, and he's like, what's going on here? What are you doing? You gonna shoot me, kind of thing? And so that tension was there. And she kind of stands up to him and she says, I know what you've been doing with to your little girl. Henry knows. He saw it all. And she goes, I'm going to call the authorities and we're going to take care of this. And he kind of backs down and goes back to his house, where, I don't know, to me it seemed like judging from his character before all of this, it seems like at that point he would have felt threatened enough where he would have come after her. And her standing up to her, up to him, and being strong in front of him wouldn't have been enough. And it might have been better, in my opinion, if there was, that he did come after her and there was a struggle and eventually the gun went off and he was killed. But maybe she was injured or, you know, something like that. You know, more of a thriller type thing at the end of that. But instead, he kind of backs down and goes back to his house. In the meantime, the little girl, Christina, was at the talent show and she was doing her ballet dancing. And the principal was watching her from backstage and he saw the pain in her eyes. And she saw the hurt that was coming through in her dancing. And so she realized that the girl was being abused and that she needed to do something. And so she called social services or the police or whatever. Again, I thought that was a little convenient for the plot, but you know, it works. He goes home, he calls his brother or he calls the police station. And he says, "Hey, I need you to do me a favor. You're going to be hearing lots of allegations, some crazy allegations against me." And he's basically informed that, hey, the police are on their way. They've heard enough. He can't get out of it anymore. He ends up shooting himself. Again, I should have warned you, spoilers for this episode. But, and then everybody's happy, and Christina ends up getting adopted by Henry's mom, and then everybody's a happy family and everything's cool. So yeah, the ending is a little bit weird and convenient, and I don't know what kind of a life lesson you can learn from that. Shooting people is bad, even if they're doing wrong things. And that's maybe why everybody has such a big problem with the movie, is that there's nothing to learn from the movie. There's no life-affirming message other than stand up to bullies, maybe. But to me, there was a couple missed opportunities there. But I still liked the movie. I was engaged at the movie on one level when the kid was alive. And just getting to know Henry and his mom and kind of wondering, you know, why was he so much in charge? And then after he died, the whole let's murder the neighbor kind of thing, especially as it built towards her actually doing it and that tension there. I thought that was pretty interesting, and I was engaged on a different level. And, you know, maybe the ending fell a little bit flat, but I don't think there was anything like I said, I thought the direction of the movie was good. The acting was good. There wasn't anything that was overt, you know, terrible about the movie. And maybe it was, you know, I don't know what Lucasfilm thought or why they got rid of him, but, you know, maybe they thought, well, we don't want this movie that has, it's kind of got mixed messages. We don't want that associated with our Star Wars movie. Or if there was already issues between the direction that Colin Trevorrow wanted to take Episode 9 and Lucasfilm, and since they already had some bad experiences with Lord and Miller and other things, that they decided, hey, we don't want to go through this again before the movie even starts. Let's cut our losses here and let Trevorrow on his way, and let's get JJ back in here to take care of things and finish up this trilogy the way it should be. You know, I think it's more that than the other. I don't know if the Book of Henry in and of itself was enough to sink him at Lucasfilm. I think he's a good director. I liked Jurassic World, maybe not as much as Rish, because he seems to just love that movie. But I liked it. I enjoyed it quite a bit, Jurassic World. So I thought that was good. I thought Book of Henry was good. I would like to see him do like an Alfred Hitchcock kind of movie, because I was kind of getting into that vibe, and I wish more of that could have been followed through with. Like, the mom could have got into an actual threatening situation where she was in danger. They kind of slided past that. And, you know, I guess maybe that character as an abuser, you know, he's also a coward. That's why he's taking out his issues or whatever, or doing whatever to a child that can't defend herself. and that makes him a coward, and that's why he was faced with a woman that was going to stand up to him and not just back down to him. That coward has showed up, and that's why he didn't do anything. But, man, I'm thinking this guy's a, you know, an animal trapped in a corner. He's going to lash out. But I think, you know, I thought it was a good show. I wouldn't think that that would sink somebody's career. I'm hoping that Colin Trevorrow is going to do more stuff, that he won't let losing episode 9 hurt his career at all. But I don't know. Hollywood's a fickle thing, I guess. Well, let's talk about Hidden Figures to end out this episode. So Hidden Figures came out in 2016, I think. It's an older, well, old, not older, but at least a year old or something like that. But it's about these black women that were part of NASA, and they were literally the computers before, you know, computers existed. Or I shouldn't say existed, but were widely used at NASA, and they were human computers. They could do calculations quickly. They could do, you know, math very easily, and do complex problems with ease. So I guess the cast, the main cast, the main actress in it is Tarigi P. Henson. I think that's how you say her name. I've heard it pronounced, but I don't remember exactly what it is. And I like her a lot. My first experience with her as an actress was on Person of Interest. And she was the detective that kind of was tracking. I can't remember their names now, but, you know, there was the man in the suit who was played by, anyway, I'm not going to get into all that, but you know him. He played Jesus in Passion of the Christ. Jim Caviezel, is that it? And then Michael Emerson was his partner, and they had this AI that would give him people that were needed to be watched over or protected, or they were the threat or something like that. But anyway, I watched all 5 episodes of that, but in the first few episodes, or first few seasons of Person of Interest, Tarigi P. Henson played this detective, and she became part of it and knew who these people were and what they were doing, and actually became a help in helping these guys do stuff. But eventually she left the show. Oh, now I can't remember the show that she's in now. She plays Cookie. Oh, Empire, right? Yeah, so she left Person of Interest to be a cast in Empire, where she has a much more prevalent role. She's kind of the main actress in that. She seems to be doing well in it. But anyway, so she plays the main role in this movie. Katherine Johnson is the woman that she plays. Another actress in this is, again, Octavia Spencer, who was in Gifted. But she plays a much bigger role in this movie as well. And then Janelle Monáe plays Mary Jackson. Oh, Octavia Spencer played Dorothy Vaughn. Kevin Costner is in this movie. He's like the head of NASA. He gets to know Catherine pretty well. Kirsten Dunst is in this movie in a limited role. Jim Parsons is in the movie in a limited role. So some good actors and good actresses in here. Mahershala Ali is in this movie, kind of as a love interest in this, and this doesn't really give him an opportunity to show his acting, but if you remember back when I was talking about Luke Cage, the Netflix series, I really liked him in that role as Cottonmouth, and he's, you know, I guess he's got the Oscar. He's a good actor, and he's in there as in a limited role, but it's really about these three women, Tarigi P. Henson. You know, it starts out where she's a little girl, a different actress, of course. She's proves that she's super smart. But, of course, this is back in the 1950s? No, 60s, because, well, I guess when she was a little girl, she would have been in the 50s. Because I guess First Man on the Moon was, what, 69, right? So she's probably about 1920 or around there. So anyway, in the 1960s, you know, before all the civil rights and stuff like that, you know, a little black girl isn't going to go very far, unfortunately. But she does end up going to a special school, I believe, and she's able to grow her talents in math, and she ends up becoming this computer person. It's funny to call somebody a computer, a person a computer, but, you know, before the big mainframe computers and now, of course, personal computers and iPhones, people were the computers, and these genius people were able to crunch these numbers quickly. But anyway, so all three of these women are friends, and they get jobs at NASA, and Tarishi B. Henson's character ends up becoming, you know, right there with all the guys in the right in the main NASA control area or whatever. And she has to earn their respect. You know, there's a lot of, you know, bad treatment of her as a woman and as a black woman. And they resent her being so smart and that she can do things better than they can. But she proves again and again that she can do things, and she has a drive to do what needs to happen, and she proves herself, and she earns the respect of, you know, the head of NASA there. There's some really interesting scenes where he doesn't realize how much, you know, she is a woman and is a black woman who has, when she wants to go to the bathroom, she has to run all the way across the NASA campus and go where the colored bathrooms are. And one day he gets mad at her. He says, "Where do you go for so long?" And he's kind of mad at her. And she just loses it and lashes out and says, "I have to do this. And I have to go to the run across the thing to go to the bathroom." And, you know, they didn't want her to use the same coffee pot as they were using. And all this kind of stuff that was going on. And, you know, this isn't just a fictitious movie. This is based on true actual characters, these women. Octavia Spencer's character kind of leads this pool of calculators, and they're all black women, and, you know, she's making sure that they have jobs to do and things like that. But she sees they're installing a big IBM mainframe computer to do a lot of this stuff, and she realizes that, hey, this job, there's no security at this job. If this computer comes in and does everything, but who's going to program the computer? And so she starts learning COBOL, I think it is what they're programming in. She starts learning that, and she starts teaching all of these other women how to program in COBOL and how to do all this stuff. And she kind of sneaks in there and learns on the computer, and she's able to help solve the computer problems when they come up. And there's a lot of good scenes around that too, and just how critical these women were in NASA succeeding and getting men on the moon and other things. And it's just a really good movie. I like historical biopics. You know, they're not always 100% accurate, but they do a good job of showing the things that these people went through and how valuable they were. And unsung heroes, you know, for a black woman to be acclaimed back in the 60s, 1969, and in the 50s, you know, that's, you're not going to see that. That's why the movie is called Hidden Figures. And it's just a great movie, kind of along the lines of The Help, which was another movie that showed how badly black people were treated back then. Something that we need to be aware of and reminded of. And, you know, I see some people, stupid people, complaining about these movies and how it's brainwashing people to believe these things. But that's not the intent. I mean, the intent is to show, hey, look how these people were treated. You know, there's still problems today. We need to work on those things. And I really enjoyed this movie. And all three of these movies are pretty good. So there you go. Although that's this episode here of the Strewn Along the Path. Hopefully you like these episodes. I've been doing quite a few of them. Yeah, if you disagree with me, if you don't like some of these movies, if you think Book of Henry was too disturbing or not very good, and that Colin Trevorrow doesn't deserve to do Star Wars or whatever, let me know. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to hear different opinions. Even if I don't agree or whatever in the end, I'd love to hear from you and find out what you guys think of these movies. And I guess we'll see what else is true along the path next time. So for now, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Good night, everybody.
They'll call it a mystery, but we're gonna call it
victory.
We'll be right in history. It's gonna be
victory.
There'll be signs on top of signs, just so you know that
history,
it's saying victory
is with me.
The Journey Into Podcast is produced under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.
Yes, it's